Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I am joined today by friend of the show, co-host of LasserCast and Comics
Comic Books Transformed.
Comic Books Rollout. Comic Books Transformed. Mr. Peter Marsh.
Hello there.
Hello. How is everything with you?
It's great, man. I was just out recruiting some spiritual warriors, and I was in Circle K, and I ran into Pete Davidson, and it was just serendipitous, man. He's going to join me in my spiritual warriors.
Wow. Yeah. So you probably know that the Denis Villeneuve version of Dune came out recently, or Dune Part One, as it's really called. And I saw that film and I liked it a lot. I know Pete liked it. He talked about it on his channel, Anchor Pete. And I thought it would be fun to talk about something different, actually, Jodorowsky's Dune. So to give you a little background, Dune was written by Frank Herbert, published in 1965. According to Wikipedia, it's been called the world's best-selling science fiction novel. Okay. Herbert himself wrote 5 sequels: Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, The God Emperor of Dune, Heretics of Dune, and Chapter House Dune. And now his son and some other dude just write a bunch more. Dune was considered an unfilmable book. It was widely popular, but it was, almost 700 pages. It's huge. It's, this was 1965. This is before Star Wars. So people just thought, there's no way you could ever turn this into a film.
Right.
And the first person who tried to turn it into a film was Alejandro Jodorowsky, who is currently 92 years old.
Yes.
He's a Chilean-French filmmaker and artist. He's a surrealist.
Yes.
His first big hit was El Topo from 1970, and this was a midnight movie. This is a pure art film. It's kind of a Western, but really not. It's wild. And then he made Holy Mountain in 1973, which was a bigger production, but still just as much as a surrealist film. And he got in with this French producer who was like, I'll give you a lot of money. Let's do whatever you want. And he said, I want to do Dune, even though he had not even read it at that point.
That's right.
And this film, if you're going, oh man, where is it streaming? It does not exist. This film did not happen. But it's a crazy story, as the cast list alone and the amount of talent working on the film is incredible. And they even made, basically what they ended up doing was they wanted to make the whole thing in like a book form. So then they could go to Hollywood and go, this is the whole thing. You could trust us. So basically that book kind of exists somewhere. He has one. That's what's left of his Dune. Dune, of course, was then a few years later actually made by another surrealist, David Lynch.
Yes.
That film is hated by most. Lynch doesn't like it himself.
Right.
Jodorowsky doesn't like it. And then most recently, big blockbuster treatment, The New Dune, which give you my background, it's my only experience with it. I haven't read the novel, and I haven't even seen the original Lynch film.
Whoa. Okay.
I've seen, my first taste of Dune was this new film. And I kept going to my girlfriend, wow, George Lucas stole a lot from this.
He sure did. Yes.
The lead character even has a biblical name, Paul. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Tell me, what's your background with Dune?
Yeah, mine is very different from yours. I have read Dune, and out of the 6 books that Frank Herbert wrote, I have read 4 of them. His son, like you said, Brian Herbert, wrote a bunch of books with Kevin J. Anderson, and there is currently 15 of them, and I've read 9. I'm really into Dune just in general. I liked it when I saw the David Lynch version. I've seen the David Lynch version many times. I own it. There was also a sci-fi Channel miniseries of Dune.
Yeah,
that came out in 2000, right?
No one ever talks about that.
When I, you know, was younger, I used to think that if you took that Sci-Fi Channel version and you took the David Lynch version and you put them together, you'd probably be able to capture the feeling of the book. But this Denis Villeneuve version is the closest I feel to the book so far.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've also seen that Denis Villeneuve version and I like it. I love the ambition of Jodorowsky's Dune, like his idea and his image, but I do feel like it would have like turned people off, and like all of the people that were brought together to make the movie, you know, they all kind of came together and they've gone on to make bigger and better things.
Yeah.
And had his Dune been a success, who knows what our film landscape would look like, you know?
Right. It would be entirely different. Because it would in some ways, I think, replace Star Wars.
Yeah, and maybe in a negative way.
Yeah.
You know, because Star Wars is so, like, topical and of the time. And I think that, like, the country needed Star Wars in 1977. Right. It's interesting because, like, for Jodorowsky, he talks multiple times in the documentary about the movie itself being a prophet. Or, like, his version of Dune changing the world.
It's going to change people's minds. It's and for you to, you were joking about this before, for you to work on the film, you have to be a god warrior. Like,
yes.
He went to the guy who did the special effects for 2001 and he was just like, you know what? I can't work with you. You're not a god warrior.
That's right.
He really saw it as like, it was missionary for him. He saw it as like, this is going to change the world. This is more than a film. The film is the Messiah. It's like the film itself was Paul.
Yeah.
But you know, he's, I'd say he's fun crazy. Not crazy.
Right. He would be an absolute blast to talk to, and he was devoted to this film. He said that he would hurt himself if he had to for the movie. He said he would die for the movie. And also besides that, and by the way, you know, Mike and I are going to depth about this documentary. If you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend checking this documentary out. Even if you know nothing about Dune, it's just so entertaining, just his process of bringing everyone together. But he recruits his own son to play Paul. And his son was 12 years old at the time. And he recruits this like trainer that knows martial arts and boxing and stuff. And he has his son train with the guy 7 days a week, 6 hours a day for 2 years. Right. And it's just like insanity, you know?
That's, you know, of all the choices he made, I think if he had made the film, it would have been good. I don't know if it would have been successful, but it would have been good. But I think the biggest actual mistake he made is in that choice, because Paul's the protagonist and you need a good actor.
Yeah.
And I don't know if like learning martial arts is he basically like ruined his child's life.
yeah. So that makes me think about like, so you said that the first time you saw Dune was just this Denis Villeneuve Dune, right? Now, as a guy who's seen the Lynch version and the Sci-Fi Channel version, read the book, it's like there are things that are in every single version of Dune. And when you see Jodorowsky's story, you know, his book and stuff, you can see that he was going to have these exact scenes too.
Yeah.
And one thing that's kind of missing from the Denis Villeneuve version is that Paul is like really trained by all these different characters, and it makes him like almost like Batman to where he's like the best at many different things. And I think that his Jodorowsky having his son train is very much like Paul.
Right.
You know, where he like training him in martial arts and stuff like that. Like, it's like Paul Atreides. It's not just that it's like this white savior thing people attach to Dune, where it's like, oh, this white guy from House Atreides comes to Arrakis and helps the Fremen. It's like he's the Messiah because he's like the best.
Right.
So like, okay. So for instance, like in the Denis Villeneuve movie, right? Did you notice that there was this guy? I don't know what the actor's name is, but he was like African American, but he was kind of pale with like freckles. Do you remember him?
Yes.
And do you remember at one point, like he kind of his eyes become white?
Right. He does a calculation.
Yeah. Like as someone that's just seen this for the first time, you might be like, well, what the hell is going on there?
Right. That I have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a mentat. Okay. And the idea with mentats is that they are like people that are computers, essentially. Like they're biological people, but they're able to to function like a computer and calculate things. And what you don't know from Denis Villeneuve's version of Dune is that there's no like robots or anything like that. And it's because humanity was taken over by artificial intelligence at one point and had to rebel. And so like every kind of thing that like computers or robots would do in the future, they make all humans be super advanced and be able to do. So that's what Mentats.
So there's such a that's such a dense backstory before you get into it.
Right. And Dune itself, you said it was like 700 pages. It's only 412 pages.
Okay.
But you're right. It's like so dense. Like the David Lynch version of Dune, when people went to go see it in theaters, they gave out a fucking glossary that people would read. It when you know, you would go to get your tickets, they would give you a glossary to read in the theater before the movie started.
Wow.
Of like terms. Yeah, yeah.
I think this new film did a great job at getting information to you without explaining it, without exposition. Like
right.
Paul's mother, Jessica, is not the wife of Leto.
No.
She's the concubine. But instead of somebody coming out and explaining that, there's one scene when they're in bed together and he says, oh, I should have married you. Like, that's good drama. You know, I never for a second felt in this film, the new film, like confused or anything. Like I totally got where everyone was, where everybody was coming from. I think he did a great job making a film for me, making a film for someone who might not know Dune other than just a little bit about it.
Yeah, which is so ironic, right? Because Denis Villeneuve, he's known for saying that he made Dune for one person, for one audience member, himself.
Yeah.
And yet he has made the most accessible version of Dune. And so it's very interesting for me because now you've had four filmmakers. Unfortunately, I don't remember the name of the Sci-Fi Channel director, but he's probably like more of a, you know, journeyman director, more standard kind of director. But then you have like David Lynch, Jodorowsky, and Denis Villeneuve. And these are like directors that really have unique visions. And it's kind of interesting because like the further you go back, the more out there the director is, right? Because David Lynch is weird as shit, right?
It's interesting that they went from Jodorowsky to David Lynch, because it's not like they went from a weird artist surrealist to like a real like Spielberg type. Like it basically changed hands to a guy that's almost as weird. Basically, like before Dune, he had made Eraserhead and Elephant Man was, I think, his biggest like blockbuster film or mainstream film. And then to give him Dune is just like insane.
Yes. Yeah. And it just, to me, I always wondered, like, should you put Dune in the hands of a visionary creator that is more interested in like creative storytelling and being out there versus like someone that wants to make it accessible? And that's what they've done with this modern version of it. But when you look at the creation of the story of Dune itself, like if you ever see pictures of Frank Herbert, he looks kind of like a boring guy, like this bearded white guy.
Right.
And he doesn't look that interesting. And when you find out why he created Dune in the first place, initially it even sounds kind of boring too. Do you know why Frank Herbert came up with Dune?
No. He was an environmentalist?
Right. He was very much focused on the environment. He went and lived in Oregon for a little while, and he was in this area where they have sand dunes, and apparently the sand dunes over time would move so much that they would kind of like eat into the roads and affect the man-made stuff. So the people in the area put down this special kind of grass that would stop the dunes from moving. And that just triggered something in his mind. He thought, oh man, look at humans trying to control nature. Look at them trying to control these dunes. And that was the first inspiration. Then the second part is that he was really focused on like superhuman people and like people that are like messiahs and stuff. And he noticed that a lot of the religions come from desert environment, right? And so that's where he kind of came up with this story for Dune, where you have Paul, who's like this messiah figure. And at first he made it kind of like Lawrence of Arabia. And you can still feel that influence on the story.
Yeah.
But he just added a lot more layers to it and made it a lot more complex. That's why you have things like the Mentats and the Guild Navigators and all this kind of crazy weird shit.
Right.
And like you mentioned the mom before, the mom is a Bene Gesserit sister.
Right.
Right. And that's even some weird shit too. But one last thing about the Genesis that's real interesting though, is that Frank Herbert was a big mushroom head too, apparently.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. And so it's so trippy. And so I kind of see that connection with Jodorowsky, because like he would grow his own mushrooms and take them. And it's kind of like the spice that's in Dune and expands your mind.
Right. Well, there's to get to some of the list of the people who worked on this film, one of the people that worked on the film was Dan O'Bannon. Dan O'Bannon did the special effects for Dark Star. So he was hired to do the special effects for Dune, but we now know him mostly as a writer. He wrote Alien. He wrote Dead and Buried. He wrote Return of the Living Dead. Yep. And talk about a boring looking guy. Given those movies that I just told you, like if you saw Dan O'Bannon, he looks like the dude from American Gothic. He's got like suspenders. He would like dress like a little old man, but he would make these wild out there movies. Mm-hmm. Anyway, getting to the point you just made, when Jodorowsky went to him, he was like, I have these special marijuana. He said like they smoked it, and then he was just like, this is what the movie's like. And then he had a crazy trip, mm-hmm. and then the trip ended, and then Jodorowsky was like, so that's it, do you want to do it? And Dan O'Bannon was like, yeah, of course I want to do it. So okay, just having seen this new film,
yes,
is there a sort of cool weirdness in Dune that's not in a new film? Because a new film is slick. It's super Hollywood. It tones down a lot of stuff. It tones up the Duncan Idaho, Jason Momoa. And I'm wondering, like, if there's a cool, trippy weirdness.
Yeah, I'm so, so very glad you asked that question. I actually think I've been waiting for someone to ask me that question. But yeah, like Dune in itself is so much about just fucking like pondering reality and morality and existence and like the spice, the stuff that they are fighting over, they're trying to harvest in the Denis Villeneuve version, every version of Dune.
Right.
It does multiple things, right? It can extend your life, it can make you live longer. It heightens your senses, but it also makes you like trip. And Paul has visions in the Denis Villeneuve version when he's kind of exposed to spice, right? There's this whole thing that they don't show in the Villeneuve movies at all, which they show in every other version of Dune, and that there are these people that consume crazy amounts of spice. And when they do it, it changes their body. They look like kind of big floating embryo people.
Whoa.
And they're called guild navigators. And they're the ones that help spaceships travel through space. And
like that character from The High Republic. That old woman from Light of the Jedi who's like...
Yes.
Like they keep her in like a coffin and she finds the hyperspace.
Yes, yes. Wow. Yeah, a lot of things in science fiction are derived from Dune, right? Just like that thing in The High Republic, like you said. And that's a nice little promo. That's on the Anchor Pete channel if you guys want to go check that out. Me and Mike talked about it. But anyway, the stuff with the guild navigators is just so fucking trippy because they fold space and that's how ships are able to travel.
Oh, wow.
And you don't see any of that in the Denis Villeneuve. They just show ships showing up, right?
Yeah, there's nothing, and I like the film, but there's nothing in at least this first film that feels ambiguous or open to your interpretation. It feels like they turned up the action, and there are, like we've said, there's a lot of elements of Star Wars that were taken from Dune, but it seemed like they Star Wars them up, even though they were there first. You know, like, I don't totally understand what the voice is. Right. To me, it's like it sounds like Obi-Wan saying these are not the droids you're looking for. Now, I'm sure in the book Dune, it's like this way deeper thing. But in the movie, he basically has a voice that he can make people do shit with.
Yeah.
And his mom's a Jedi, I guess. I don't know.
She kind of is on some levels. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they did a very good job with the voice. And the thing with that, right, okay, is that she is a Bene Gesserit, which is like this order of women. And what they don't really let you know in the Villeneuve movie is that they have a plan that's been going on for generations, thousands of years.
Right.
And the idea, they kind of allude to it in the Villeneuve movie.
It's that one line where she's like, we helped you as much as we can.
Right, right. And the idea is that they control bloodlines and they influence who mates with who, and sometimes they mate with people themselves with the idea that they're going to make this like perfect being. And that being has a really weird name. Here's some weird shit. They're called the Kwisatz Haderach.
Okay.
And the idea is that it's going to be a male person and that they are going to be able to essentially see the past and the future. Now that sounds fucking weird in itself, but let me just explain that real quick. The Bene Gesserit sisters, like Paul's mom, they have this thing where they can actually look inside themselves and communicate with all of the people they're descended from. So like, imagine right now you kind of like turned off this podcast and you started talking to like one of your grandparents and asked them for advice. They can do that for their whole bloodline backwards.
That's like Avatar too.
Avatar. Right, The Last Airbender. Right, right. So that's something that the sisters are able to do. The Kwisatz Haderach would be able to do that and also see into the future too.
And that's what Paul is or is going to be?
So one last thing about that is that they have been manipulating these bloodlines with the idea that, like, down the road, there's going to be this Kwisatz Haderach, but it's not time yet. And Jessica was supposed to have a female child,
right.
But because she loved the Duke so much, she had a boy, and it fucked up their plan.
Yeah.
And so now Paul is potentially the Kwisatz Haderach. I'm not going to spoil if he is or not, because, you know, we have to see more Dune.
All right. Okay. All right. Awesome. All right. I want to go through some of this cast of characters that Jodorowsky got together for his film.
Yes.
So there's that French producer, Michel Seydoux.
Right.
Then he gets Mobius, Jean Mobius Girard, a comic book artist who does all the storyboard. They storyboarded the entire film.
Yeah.
He does all the storyboards and he does costume designs. And the costume designs are so colorful. They're so wild. They're so trippy. You know, one thing about this new Dune is it's got that Zack Snyder disease of everything's dreary, right?
Yeah.
That grittiness that has been plaguing us since Batman Begins.
right.
The gritty realism. But these are like all of the costumes are just fucking out there.
Yeah.
You're a bigger comic book guy than I am. What do you know about Mobius?
So I actually have never read a comic that was illustrated by Mobius, mm-hmm. but as someone that like is obsessed with comics, I know that he is a huge influence on so many artists and that he is just like a legend, right? He's like Jack Kirby. But like European, right? And like one of the things that's kind of interesting right now is that Taika Waititi, I don't know if you heard this, but he's making a movie based on a Jodorowsky comic called Inkle, right? Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did.
And so the big controversy like on Twitter and social media is like everyone keeps saying that it's Jodorowsky's comic, whereas Mobius drew the whole thing and he's not getting any credit for it.
Wow.
But Mobius is just like a tremendous influence. And I've seen his artwork. I just haven't read any of his comics.
Wow.
And his artwork is just beautiful. And it's just like the trippiest kind of daydream you could have.
But, you know, Taika Waititi is one of those directors, too, that has this incredible vision. So I'm sure he's not going to be crazy faithful.
Yeah. Yeah. He's going to do his own thing. Yeah. But he gave credit to both Mobius and to Jodorowsky. And I'm excited now after watching this documentary because that movie that he's going to make, Inkle, is based on a comic where Jodorowsky couldn't do his ideas for Dune, so he put him into this Inkle comic.
Right, right. Because Jodorowsky, too, now like has worked on comics.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, I was watching this documentary, I kept thinking, all right, you can't get it happening. Why not go to Ralph Bakshi and say, let's make this animated?
Yeah.
I don't know. They were so close to that. I don't know why they didn't go that route.
Yeah. He talks about it at the end of the documentary, like saying, like, even if I die, someone could take my book and turn it into an animated feature. So no one's ever had the balls to do that. But I don't know.
One of the interesting hypotheses of this documentary, and it's sort of how they end the whole thing, is they imply that, see, Jodorowsky's producer went to every major studio with one of these books, a copy of one of these giant books. And this book, I mean, if you saw it, it doesn't look like, it looks like something you'd buy for hundreds of dollars. It doesn't look like some production thing. It's got a beautiful cover. It's got the script in it. It's got every design and sketch in it. It's gorgeous. And they stupidly sent one to every major studio. And every major studio said, no, we don't want to make it. Then you start to see everything in the, they basically kept the books and stole everything else. There's a montage at the end of the documentary where they show you something from the book and an image from Star Wars or Masters of the Universe or Flash Gordon or Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it looks exactly like something from the Dune book. And it's like, holy shit. They basically came up with this vision, this true vision, and gave it away for free. And Hollywood said, we won't pay you for it, but we'll take it and use it.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible. Like everything that's from our childhood that we have so much nostalgia for, you know, like you said, Flash Gordon, Masters of the Universe, it all spawned from here. It's from the relationships that were made, you know. And one of the things that's highlighted in the documentary is that, you know, you had Mobius, obviously, but he was just designing one aspect of the movie. Then you bring in H.R. Giger.
Yeah.
And H.R. Giger designed so much of the movie, too.
But his job is only to stay with the Harkonnen.
Right.
Because that's his style. Like, he did this really cool thing where he had a different designer for every planet, but also a different band for every planet. Like, who was it? Pink Floyd was what? Were they Arrakis?
Pink Floyd was, he was House Atreides, right?
Oh, Paul's right, right, right. And then yeah. they had this, I'm not, I don't know the band, but then they had, what was it
called? Magma.
Right, they were going to be Harkonnen.
That's right.
Yeah.
I never heard of Magma before, so I didn't know what they were like, but apparently they kept saying that they were kind of violent and militant yeah. in their sound. So it makes me kind of want to check out their work, you know?
Right. H.R. Giger is an amazing artist, and if you don't think you know him, you're wrong, because he's probably most famous for designing the xenomorph alien from the film Alien. And also yeah. a lot of the ships, a lot of the look of Alien. He's known for, he has a really great art book, which I actually have. It's amazing. It's called Necronomicon. And it actually has an early version of the alien in that. But his head is actually like an actual penis, not just a figurative penis. And his thing was like cyborgs. Like you couldn't tell what was flesh and what was metal. It looked like living matter and man-made matter all coming together. Yeah. And so that's why he was going to do, you know, the bad guy, he the Baron's castle and all that shit. But a lot of that ends up in Ridley Scott's Alien.
Yeah. And in Prometheus, right? In that montage.
Yes.
They show the building that they're, or the whatever it is that they're in Prometheus, and it's sort of based on this castle of the Baron.
Yeah.
And I love the whole H.R. Giger sequence of the documentary of Jodorowsky's Dune, because like they'll cut to him talking, and it always sounds like the music gets kind of sinister.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he's talking, he's got this like, and so, you know, it's just the language itself kind of is very harsh sounding.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got a very strong accent.
Right, right. And he has to take deep breaths to talk. So it just always kind of cuts this sort of like real intense, dark thing where he's almost like a goblin or something. And he's like, right, exactly. He's like,
he's Swiss. He's a Swiss artist.
Oh, Swiss. Okay. Yeah. And so I'll just say, like, I'll do an impression where he's speaking in English instead, but he's like, they had to make me make spikes on the tower. You know, it's just, yeah, it's something out of like D&D. But to me, he's an artist that's had such an impact on my life. Like his artwork is so distinct for me because of Alien and because everybody kind of riffs off of him.
Yeah.
That it's like, he wasn't making movies before this. This made him start to be part of the whole process of making movies.
Right. Well, Jodorowsky says, look at what happens after Dune. After my Dune doesn't happen, people hire my crew.
Right.
You start to see my crew working on other things. Another guy's Chris Foss, who is an English illustrator who did a lot of like 60s and 70s. I don't know the best way to describe it, like space opera, sci-fi paperbacks. Yes. A lot of that, like that stuff, like the sort of dime store novels. And he came in and he was going to do a lot of the ships. And he did the Emperor's Palace, and it's real, real kind of modernist, cool looking stuff. And I think he also worked on Alien.
Yes, yes. Alien is the movie that was the most directly influenced by this. Absolutely. And one of the ironic things, too, they didn't mention this in the documentary, but Ridley Scott was actually supposed to make Dune before it was given to David Lynch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they didn't mention that. And so, you know, he ends up taking most of Jodorowsky's team and making Alien. And then that leads to Blade Runner eventually, too.
Right,
and it just, they talk about it in the movie of the idea of like, this movie was like a meteorite passing by, you know, and like had it actually hit, it would have changed our whole landscape. And because it didn't hit, that's the world that we have now.
Yeah,
right.
It's crazy. It's crazy to think about, like, what if this thing was actually made? Like, how different would things really be?
Our whole world would be different, and not just movies, because like obviously movies influence things, right?
Right.
Because like without Star Wars, just think about how many people are influenced by Star Wars and influence their careers and like people in science because of Star Wars and things like that, you know, and it influenced special effects and I'm sure the budgets of movies too. Because like one thing that's interesting when you do this research is that I think for their version of Dune, for Jodorowsky's Dune, I think they just wanted $35 million. I believe that's the number they said. And that time in the 70s, that's a tremendous amount of money.
Right.
But then when you look at David Lynch's Dune was in 1984. So it's like a little less than 10 years later. And that cost $40 million to make. So because of Star Wars, the whole expectation and everything shifted.
Right.
And so, and you wouldn't have Star Wars without this Jodorowsky Dune.
And you wouldn't have a lot of the narrative elements in Star Wars if without the novel Dune.
That's right. That's
so
right.
The cross-pollination is so fascinating. And it is interesting to think maybe it's better that it never happened. Like, it's better that it became... Because who knows? It could have been a whole mess. You know, what they were saying, they have Gary Kurtz, the producer of Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, and then he pieced the fuck out for Return of the Jedi. Now, I don't know if this is true. The old rumor, the old myth is that he was talking to George about why they changed their clothes so much in the Return of the Jedi script. And George said, well, that could be more figures. And Gary Kurtz quit. Now, I don't know if that's the truth, but that's the old legend of him being like, fuck this. But anyway, he's in this documentary and he says, like, basically the movie, they were all up behind the movie. They were not behind Jodorowsky. They were like, this guy's crazy. Right. This guy's on it. You know, how can we give all this money to this guy who's made his last movie was about a Jesus figure that like made like shat a gold shit. And we're going to give him $35 million to make, you know, and he also wanted it to be like, he didn't care about how long it was. And they were like, it's got to be an hour and a half. And he was non-negotiable on it, and that was it.
Right, right. That's an issue with Dune in general, is the length of time. Like, even David Lynch wanted his version of Dune to be two parts. Denis Villeneuve has made his version of Dune two parts. The Sci-Fi Channel made it into 3 2-hour parts, so it's 6 hours altogether to tell this story.
That might be.
Yeah, and Jodorowsky wanted to make, like, a 10-hour epic.
Right.
And that just, you know, people wouldn't have been down for that.
it just wouldn't have been good. It could have been great, but it wouldn't have been, you know, it would have been art, but it would not have been a successful entertainment. And for that much money, Hollywood wants entertainment.
Right,
I mean, honestly, what does you look at all the elements of Star Wars, the one thing that it knew how to do was to be super fucking entertaining. Like, what Star Wars is.
Right.
All right, let's go over some of the cast, because I think this cast is crazy. So Leto, who's in this new version, played by what's his name? Handsome.
David Carradine. Oh, you're talking about in the
new one.
In the new one, it's fucking Poe Dameron. It's Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac, very handsome man.
Yes, I agree.
In Jodorowsky's, it was going to be David Carradine from Kung Fu.
That's right.
That's cool. You might know him if you don't know him from Kung Fu, you'll know him from as Bill from Kill Bill.
That's right. And one of the absolute pleasures of watching Jodorowsky's Dune is his description of when he meets every person.
Yeah.
And it seems like serendipitous. And Jodorowsky always does like little sound effects when he's describing things too.
Yeah.
And so he described meeting David Carradine and how Jodorowsky had like a big bottle of vitamin E.
Yeah.
And David Carradine just came in and just gulped the vitamin E down, you know, and it's just you visualize it. It just sounds like so much fun. But every time he meets somebody, it's like this serendipitous thing where they run into each other at a party, or like one person was looking for the other. And he points out how like this is before the internet, so it wasn't easy to find people and make that connection.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that David Carradine actually would have made an excellent Duke Leto.
Yeah.
But, you know, the rest of the casting is just ridiculous. The casting itself reminds me, have you ever seen that meme where it's like the Marvel Universe, but in the 90s? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Right, where they're like, oh, well, Tony Stark would be played by Tom Cruise. And, you know, so I feel like Jodorowsky's Dune is like that, but it's for this weird fucking Dune story. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the two that are so, as a film fan and art fan, the two that really fascinate me are, as the Emperor, Salvador Dali. And the story of how he met him is crazy, because Dali kept telling him to meet him in different countries, like, meet me in Barcelona, meet me here, meet me there, meet me in New York. And he would like ask him some weird, surreal question. And if he got it wrong, he wouldn't want to talk to him. But if he got it right, he'd say, OK, we can meet again.
Right.
And then he had like crazy ideas. I want a camel on fire, and I want to be paid more than anyone's ever been paid, and just this crazy shit.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Orson Welles as the Baron. Now, this is a great idea, actually, because Orson Welles was larger than life as a person, but then at the end of his life, he was hugely overweight. He was perfect for the role, actually. You know what his last role was, right?
Unicron.
Your favorite movie.
Absolutely.
Another movie where he's gigantic.
Just eating things, eating planets.
Yeah. Oh, and the thing with that is, he didn't want to make a movie, and Jodorowsky found out he went to the same restaurant every day, and he was like, I'll hire the chef of that restaurant and he'll just cook whatever you want every day on the movie. And then Orson was like, okay, I'll do it.
I'll accept, you know, and 8 bottles of wine while he was talking to him. Yeah.
He would have been great as the Baron, though.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he did such a great job as Unicron at the very end of his life. And that character is just so big, and he's like a big globe. And that's kind of what those pictures of Orson Welles look like.
That's what he really looked like at the end. Yeah. I mean, without prosthetics.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you got Orson Welles. The thing is that for each person, the casting is spot on. It matches what you would envision for the character. And those two are great examples. I love the Salvador Dali stories too. That could be a book in itself, just their interactions. But what throws me off is casting Mick Jagger as Fade.
But doesn't it end up being Sting?
Ends up being Sting, yeah.
It ends up being a rock star anyway.
Right. It's Sting in like a leather diaper. That's what people always say in the David Lynch version. But like, you haven't seen in the Denny Villeneuve version, Fade's not in it at all.
Neither is the Emperor.
No, I think that was actually very wise of them to do, because if there is going to be a part two, then you can put them in it and it'll work. And like, the character of Fade is the Baron's nephew, just like Raban was his nephew too. And so you'd have essentially Orson Welles floating around in the air, and then you'd have Mick Jagger kind of dressed up in some skimpy outfit, right?
Man, come on. Well, since the Emperor, I only know this from YouTube videos of like, they have those YouTube videos about what did they change in Dune, and apparently the Emperor is in the beginning of the book, right?
Oh yeah. And if you watch any other version of Dune, the Emperor is in every version of Dune, and it plays a major role.
So why do you think they kept him out of this Dune part one?
I mean, obviously, I think for like budgetary reasons, I think to like save money. One thing that we haven't mentioned before is that there's a lot of covers for Dune books, right? There's a beautiful piece of artwork for every Dune book. And we've established that there is 21 Dune books out. When I look at the Denny Villeneuve version of it, it looks like Dune book covers. Like, there's scenes, there's shots in the Denny Villeneuve thing that, like, that's my imagination. That's what I picture when I picture Dune. But you mentioned before that it's sort of like the Zack Snyder kind of color toned down kind of approach.
Yeah.
When a lot of Dune covers show like the Fremen and the desert, and it is that kind of toned down thing, right?
Yeah.
But there's another aspect of Dune that you see a little bit of with House Atreides, but it's the sort of the royal family kind of thing. Royal house thing, and it's all extravagant, and that matches the Jodorowsky vision. And if we had stuff with the Emperor, it would look like that.
Okay.
And so I think just for budgetary reasons and to not be so out there, I think that's why they cut the Emperor stuff.
Well, part two has been greenlit, so it is going to happen.
Yeah.
They haven't fixed the Emperor yet, have they?
No. No, not yet.
What do you think would be good?
Oh, that's a very good question. For me, if I see a movie before I read a book, which that happened with David Lynch's Dune, I will a lot of the times associate the actor with the character. So, like, for me, the Emperor that's in David Lynch's Dune, that's what I see for the Emperor.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, they'll probably get someone that's, like, not white to play the Emperor, just so that they can kind of diversify it a little bit more. There's nothing wrong with that. That's good, right? But if I could see someone playing him, I would kind of picture like maybe like the guy that played Dumbledore.
Michael Gambon?
Yeah. Just a kind of stern kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I mean, believe me, that's a very big detachment from Salvador Dali. He's not this extravagant kind of...
right.
Like, yeah, he lives in a very elegant castle and everything like that, but that's not his personality.
Well, noted is that stunt casting. Because Salvador Dali's not an actor. He probably couldn't do a good job. The meaning, to be all like semiotic about it, the meaning you would get as the audience member would be seeing... Oh, that's the great artist Salvador Dali. Like, it's just that. It's just, holy shit, that's the emperor of this weird world is this person that we know from making these weird images. Yeah. So it could have easily failed very badly.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of thing. That's where there's a departure. Like, with Jodorowsky's Dune, there's a departure in a few different ways. Like, in Jodorowsky's Dune, they show that Paul gets killed at the end. I guess this is kind of a spoiler, but Paul does not get killed at the end. The Dune, of Jodorowsky's Dune, like, they changed the whole planet, the desert planet, right?
I was going to ask you about this. Some of the changes he made at the end of Hodorowski's Dune, it was not going to be a dune. It was going to start growing things, growing flora and animals growing, and it was going to be, that was how it was going to end.
That doesn't happen at all. Like, he took it on a totally different route. Like, that kind of applies to his whole idea of, like, the movie being a prophet or being a Messiah, right? And so that's totally different. Then there's this whole this one sequence that he added was that the Duke was castrated.
By a bull.
Right. And there is stuff with bulls in Dune, but that whole idea of, like, the blood being, like, the semen, that's it just weird as shit.
Yeah.
But that's not in Dune at all. That's totally Jodorowsky too.
Yeah. Well, he makes this really offensive, problematic thing where he's talking about how to, when you're a filmmaker who is adapting a book, he says, and this is his words, he says, you have to rape it. He's like, he says, I raped Dune. I raped Frank Herbert, but with love.
Yes. I totally did not remember that the first time I saw it. Then the second time I was like, oh my God, this guy. Yeah, such a great quote, because he said it with his accent. He's like, I raped the Frank Herbert, you know? It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is, you would get canceled today, man, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the movie for me, the documentary, I actually found it really jazzed me up, because, like, like you said, he's so interesting to watch and hear. And he's such an artist. They show his world. They show his life. They show where he works. And it's stacks and stacks of books and images and all sorts of bullshit. And, you know, watching it, I was like, it made me jazzed to, like, go and work on my projects. Like it's one of those things where it's like, wow, like, and there's something inspiring about the documentary. Because, you know, he said that the movie never happened, but he seems fine. He, you know, he moved on. He did other shit. He made a movie as recently as 4 years ago, I think. Some crazy documentary. So he's still out there doing his shit.
His drive is kind of incredible. He said that he would give, like, almost like football team speeches every single day they worked on the movie. And he had such a passion, and he wanted to literally change the world with a movie.
Yeah.
And that in itself is inspiring. But then he says this quote at the very end while they're flashing through his book, where he's like, you know, if you're going to make art, try to make the best art. And it doesn't matter if it gets made. It matters that you try. And I think that for so many of us that kind of think, well, is it worth it? Is it worth it if I make this story and no one reads it, or if I make this movie and no one sees it? Right. And he's basically saying, like, that's what you're supposed to do. And he says something in the very beginning of the documentary, too, about how, like, filmmaking, that with a life, you're building your soul. He says something like, I'm paraphrasing.
No.
And to me, like, I just love little quotes like that, because it makes me rethink things. I like the idea that, like, you are building who you are. And I think that, like, if you are making your art for the satisfaction of making it and not compromising, then it doesn't matter if no one else sees it. You still made it.
Yeah. And I think his mindset, I think, is right, because he's quite old. But in the documentary, you could see he's still alive. He's still animated. He's still thin and healthy. And you can see, like, this way of thinking has kept him alive and, like, motivated and moving. It's really inspirational.
Yeah, he's more lively and energetic and healthy looking than I am, and I'm 40 almost. He was 46 when he was making Dune, so yeah.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
So do you like the Lynch version, or you just appreciate it?
I really love David Lynch to begin with, okay. But it's one of those things where it's like the first version you saw. Like, I saw, you know, I see your Doctor Who tattoo, right?
Yeah.
Like, is your first Doctor your favorite Doctor?
Right. Of course.
My first Doctor is my favorite Doctor too. And it's that's like what it is for Dune. You know, I just saw Lynch's version first.
Okay.
But what was your question, though?
My question was, if you could, would you trade Lynch's version for Hodorowsky's?
No. Because it really is about the after effect of Hodorowsky's movie. Like, what comes from it. That's the most important part. Star Wars comes from it. Flash Gordon. I mean, fuck Flash Gordon. But, like, you know, Alien comes from it.
Yeah.
In terms of quality, I still think that David Lynch's would make more sense, probably. Which, that's kind of crazy to say.
Right. Okay.
I think for me, honestly, if you could take elements from Jodorowsky's idea, Lynch's movie, the Sci-Fi Channel movie, the Villeneuve movie, you cherry pick them, you probably could make the best Dune ever if you just took pieces from each one.
Okay. Well, what do you, maybe we could close with this. What do you hope for with part two?
So, okay. I think that with part one, since it's gotten a pretty good response,
yeah,
I think they're assuming that people are bought in and they're willing to kind of take this journey and yeah. they're willing to kind of put up with weird sci-fi shit. And so I just kind of want to see modern, cool versions of what we haven't seen in part one. And that includes like just kind of seeing the Emperor and like his palace. That includes like seeing more Harkonnen stuff. You see this character yeah. Fade. And there's stuff with worms that we haven't really seen yet. I wasn't yeah. really impressed with the worms in Villeneuve's version. I still think that the best looking worms are the one in the Lynch version.
Why? What was your issue with the Villeneuve sandworms?
So with like, let's say the Lynch version, right? The special effects seem dated and there's a problem, right?
Yeah.
But there's something about them that conveys the enormity of them even better than the Villeneuve's version. Like the Villeneuve's version, I don't really like their mouths. I really like the David Lynch's design yeah. itself. And I don't like the mouths for the Villeneuve version. And they just seemed more imposing.
Okay, cool.
I had a question for you real quick too.
Yeah.
So I know obviously you listen or you read books, you know, because we talk about Star Wars books and stuff. Do you have any desire to read Dune at all?
Yes, I have a great desire to read Dune.
Okay.
Dune for me has always been in my mind, like on a shelf with The Lord of the Rings, which I also haven't read, of
right.
things that I want to read, but I just know it's a longer commitment.
Yep.
You know, like, what was it, yesterday or 2 days ago, I read like the first like 10 pages just for the hell of it. And I liked it, but it just it is so long. And I know it's stupid. I should do it. And I know I eventually will.
Yeah.
I don't know why I haven't. Well, I do know I haven't because it's always seemed like, you know, so dense, especially before I saw the film. Now that I've seen the film, it feels like less mystical to me. Like
yeah.
before it was like Dune. What is it about? I don't know, man. It's yeah. It's a million pages long and it'll fucking change your life. I can't even tell you about it. It's like it almost felt like, oh, God, like, I don't know if I'm ready to read
yeah.
this.
But you know what? Like every version of Dune is like such a watered down version of the book, even the David Lynch one and stuff, because it's just so dense. It's you really are in another fucking world. It's like it's so out there. It's like reading the Dark Tower books, like, you know, we have talked about yeah, before. Yeah. And then like seeing that Dark Tower movie. It's like there's only so much of that you could catch. I mean, that Dark Tower movie's horrible, but but like, it's like, what? How are you supposed to contain that in one movie, right?
Right.
And so it makes me wonder, like, are you going to watch the David Lynch version?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to hear what you think about the David Lynch version.
I'm a big Lynch fan. I just,
yeah.
It's something I never watched because I always thought of it as almost like not one of his movies because he doesn't right. like it. And, you know, when you look at David Lynch films, like a lot, they're not story driven for the no. most part. So I always felt like, oh, this is like an outlier. So I never yeah. really watched it.
Yeah. I would be very curious as to what you'd think about it and then like comparing the two.
Yeah.
And then if you ever get a chance and if you're ever like bored or like stuck in your house, you can even watch the Sci-Fi Channel one. It's got like William Hurt in it. They actually made sequels to the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries too,
really?
With the other Dune books. Yeah. And James McAvoy is in the sequels. It's interesting. I don't know. But just the thing is, if you get kind of brought into this world and you like the concepts, I think it's really worth it looking at the different versions.
How old were you when you read it? When did you read it?
I think I read Dune when I was 14.
Oh, wow. Okay. What made you pick it up? The film?
So I saw I had this one friend who kind of was almost like Paul Atreides. He was like he was like Jodorowsky. He was this outside of the box kind of dude, always making me question things. And we would talk about Star Wars and he's like, well, have you ever seen Dune? We watched the Lynch version and I thought it was really cool. And then he gave me the books. I read the books and it just, you know, is part of that whole adolescence thing, you know, and just yeah. like kind of growing up. Yeah. So I loved it. It was like a rite of passage.
Oh, okay, cool. Wow. Yeah. I do want to read it and will. Well, that's awesome. I just want to say, because we have not said yet, Jodorowsky's Dune, the documentary, was directed by a guy named Frank Pavich. And that came out in 2013. I found it online for free. But you could also get it, I think, on Prime, Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
I think it was like $3 to rent. It's even if you don't like Dune or have seen nothing else with Dune. It's just an interesting movie. If you like pop culture but don't know anything about Dune, you'll still get a lot out of it, because you'd be like, oh shit, like so much of what I love already comes from this.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you like documentaries about making movies too, it's very entertaining.
Yeah.
And Jodorowsky himself is this great character. Just love listening to him tell stories.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Pete, so much for being here.
Not a problem. I enjoy talking to you every time.
Tell the people where they can find more of your stunning intellect.
Okay. In the toilet. But yeah, I have 3 YouTube channels. One is called Anchor Pete. That's with me and my wife. And we usually review current movies and TV shows with a kind of a focus on like thrillers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have another channel called Comic Books Transformed. Me and my friend Brian talk about all kinds of movies and TV shows that are adapted from comic books. And then last but not least, I have a channel called The Lassercast, which covers horror media, movies, books, TV shows. And that's with my friend Danny. And you can find all of them on YouTube. And each of them has a corresponding podcast, too, which you could listen to on a player like you're listening to Pop Culture Mantle.
Fantastic. And it's all It's all good. Pete, thank you so much for being here. You know, we end every episode by saying go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.